shook his head as though running out of words and stepped back to allow Jordan and Thompson center stage. The chief frowned. McPhee had been the one to convince him that Jordan should be listened to, and yet now he seemed to be having doubts. It wouldn't do to have a medicine man who was openly falling out with his leader over something that was so related to his own area of expertise. The chief knew that he would have to discuss this with the shaman, but not now and not here. Meanwhile, the stranger had taken it upon himself to speak.
Friends, this is a glorious chance for us to forge a path ahead. Do not be afraid of these outsiders. If not for them, I would not have been granted a vessel by our Lord with which to come and join with ye. I know that these people are good fighters, and you know this, as ye have seen them partake in a hunt.
Ryan caught this reference, and it set alarm bells ringing in his mind. Their participation in a hunt had occurred before Doc had been possessed by the personality of Jordan. Did this mean that some semblance of Doc was still in there, struggling to surface as before?
And you know their capabilities. We will be outnumbered. And if we are to do the Lord's work, then we will need allies who will assist us in our hour of need, and upon whom we can rely. I can vouch for the integrity of these folk, and I know that they will not be found wanting.
It was a strange speech, yet it seemed to strike the right note with the assembled tribe. There seemed to be a wave of acceptance that washed over them, some perhaps accepting this more grudgingly than others, but nonetheless acquiescing to the man they had been told was their savior. Thompson felt it was time for him to assume the upper hand as chief once more. Stepping forward, he told the tribe to return to their dwellings and make ready to leave within the hour. As the Inuit turned to leave, Thompson strode forward so that he was only a few feet from the companions, who were holding their ground, unsure of what was now demanded of them. Thompson beckoned, and McIndoe came forward from the edge of the crowd, laden with hardware. At a gesture from his chief, he laid the weaponry down in front of them and stepped back. His face was set, but his eyes were glittering as he stared at them, betraying that he was one of the few who still felt ill at ease with the concept of the companions joining forces with the tribe. Ryan met his gaze and could see from the unflinching way in which McIndoe refused to back down that he, and others who still felt like him, would have to be watched. Thompson, who either ignored or didn't notice this exchange, gestured at the pile of weaponry and ammo at their feet.
You see, I give this back to you in good faith. You'll need arms to join us. But I could just as easily have kept you weaponless until we neared the Vale of Fairbanks. You would have been less danger, would have had less temptation that way. But I trust you because Jordan says that I should, and I trust him as he was sent from the Almighty. Can I trust you?
I think your mission is folly, and that we'd have to be triple-stooped to just walk into a firefight that isn't our own. But we want our freedom, and joining arms with you will help that. It's a trade-off, but we'll keep to our side of the trade.
Thompson considered this, before finally assenting with a brief nod.
You make no bones about our presumed folly, so I can see no reason why you would lie about joining us. Why be honest on the one hand, then lie on the other? Your trade is a bargain, then. Here, take your weapons. Be ready within the hour to move out.
He turned to McIndoe, his business now done.
Assemble the hunters. You must form parties of no more than 10 to move in formation.
He moved away across the center of the ville toward his own cabin, talking in low and urgent tones to his sec chief. The companions were left alone in the ville's open center. All around them, the tribe was engaged in preparing for departure. It was as though they were the calm center of the storm. Thompson was now engrossed in planning tactics with his sec chief. The companions' concerns were now discarded from his mind, and he left them alone with an implicit trust that they would be as good as their word. It was a strange attitude. Ryan would have expected the Inuit to watch them closely, having at least some suspicion that they would be waiting for the first opportunity to break. And yet, despite the minority of the tribe still having obvious doubts, they placed enough faith and obedience in the chief, and he and the assumed messenger of the Almighty, Joseph Jordan, to dismiss their doubts and place trust in his judgment.
So what the hell do we do now?
Guess we prepare ourselves to leave.
JB crouched over the pile of hardware and collection of ammo to sort through it. Jack joined him, rooting through the pile to recover his knives, hurrying to secret them in his camo jacket. Only when they were in place would he feel secure, knowing that he was protected once more.
And another thing. I hope they look after their own blasters better than they've looked after ours.
He held up his mini-Uzi to demonstrate. The usually immaculate weapon now carried a pattern of dust and grime.
Who knows what the hell the rest of them are like. We need to get these stripped and cleaned if we're going to feel safe with them.
It was something with which Ryan could only agree. At his direction, the companions returned to the hut where they had previously been held captive. As everyone else in the Ville appeared to have retreated to their own abodes to make ready for the trek, it seemed only prudent that they take advantage of the last few hours' warmth and shelter provided by the hut before beginning the journey to Fairbanks across the harsh frozen wastes. It was good to be in the warmth again, and they also took the opportunity to finish what remained of the stew and the herb tea that had been provided earlier in the day. As they ate and drank, they stripped their blasters to clean and oil them, before reloading and making sure that they each carried adequate supplies of ammo about their person. Supplied from the canvas bag JB carried, along with his Grens and Plasex. They were running low on hardware, and as he doled out the right ammo to each member of the group, it crossed his mind that if the firefight at Fairbanks carried on too long, or they became too embroiled in it, then they were running a very real risk of running out completely. It was not a position in which he wished to find himself.
The way I see it, we go with them until they begin this attack on Fairbanks, and then in the confusion we see if we can get the hell away without getting our asses kicked. From that old map Thompson showed us the first night, there isn't that big a hike from Fairbanks to Anchor Ridge. If we can hit the trail and get a clean run at it, then that's our best bet of finding some kind of shelter. Maybe pick up some work and food before making our next move.
Sounds good. But is that with or without Doc?
I'd like it to be with the old bastard. But if he's still thinking that he's this guy Jordan, there may be little we can do other than leave him behind.
It was a prospect that held little appeal for any of them. Doc was a part of their lives, and any prime directive would include taking him with them. But if he was in the vanguard of the Inuit action, still believing himself to be a 200-year-old Scott trapper, there may be little they could do to fulfill this directive.
We do what we can to make sure he comes along with us, and that's all we can do, right?
There was a silence that hung over the room like a fog. They were all only too well aware of how they felt. None of them would wish to leave Doc behind if they had the chance to break for Anchor Ridge, yet at the same time they knew that the good of the group had to ultimately count for more than the concerns of one man. Ryan had articulated this as well as any of them could. All they could do right now was wait until that moment came and wait to see how the cards fell. They continued their preparations in silence, and it was in this way that they were found by Macindo when the sect chief came to tell them it was time for the war party to depart. The center of the Ville was an awesome sight. Only a handful of the Inuit women and the few children that had survived beyond infancy in recent generations were to stay behind and maintain the Ville. The remainder of the population was gathered, ready to depart. With their lack of height and their body shapes distorted both by their mutations and the bulk of their furs and skins, it was hard to differentiate male from female, something that was exacerbated by the hard set of grim determination that now shaped most of their faces. Thompson stood apart from them, flanked by McPhee and Jordan. Although all three were also dressed in bulky furs and skins, there was something about the quality of the skin and fur that swathed the two Inuit that set them apart. Jordan was noticeable for Doc's height and mane of hair.
I'm glad you're joining us. As you can see, we are ready to depart, and I wouldn't have liked to have left without you.
Ryan looked around at the massed ranks of the Inuit, who seemed prepared to make the long trek by foot, and the few ponies and mules that they had with them, scrawny creatures laden with pack, as well as the sleds with supplies that were pulled by dogs of indeterminate breed, the sleds seemingly rickety enough to fall apart when they hit the first pothole on track. Ryan gazed upon this and wondered how the Inuit had a hope of taking on an entire Ville at the end of a long, exhausting trek. Then he remembered the stubborn and ruthless manner in which they had tackled the hunt, and realized that it didn't matter what the result of the trek may be. They had set their mind to the assault and would stop at nothing short of all buying the farm to realize their objective. Suddenly, the idea of being able to slip away from these relentless warriors in the heat of a firefight seemed an impossibility. Thompson raised a hand when he saw the companions join the pack and indicated the path leading through the woodlands and toward the trade trail through the volcanic downland slopes. Macindo responded to the gesture with hand movements of his own, which were perfectly understood by his men. The tribe began their exodus in a procession that was headed by a detachment of hunters who set forth to work their way down to the trail. A bottleneck formed behind them as the tribe narrowed into a line that could safely pass through the narrow track. It took some time for the Inuit to filter out of the ville and onto the track. It seemed impossibly slow. But this was illusory, caused by the fact that the hidden trail was, by its nature, not designed to accommodate such a large body of warriors. It seemed to the companions that nothing was happening for a great amount of time, considering this was an army on its way to a great battle, indeed, a crucial one in its history. Yet the Inuit showed no signs of impatience. Finally, after what seemed like an eternity, the companions joined those who were among the last to filter through the path and down to the main trade trail. Once they had reached this point, the pace of the party began to pick up. Soon they were on the trade trail itself, headed in the direction they had taken, was it only a few days before? Whereas the trail had seemed long, winding, and capable of hiding a multitude of dangers back then, now it seemed to be too small and insignificant to take the vast party that crammed its boundaries, moving at a brisk pace. The Inuit kept close together, clustering in the main body with a sec patrol at point to scout in advance when they reached harsher regions, and a party at rear to ensure the pace was kept, and also to watch for wildlife approaching from the shelter of the woodlands at their backs. The path wound down toward the sheltered rock in which the companions had been trapped and turned back so recently. Perhaps it was because they were so familiar with the terrain this time around that it didn't seem to take up such a distance as before. It wasn't too long before they were overshadowed by the rock walls, the front section of the party emerging onto the frozen wastes. Already, as they traversed beyond the warm streams of air fed by the outlying pockets of volcanic activity, they noticed the way in which the icy winds began to bite, making them huddle into their furs. It was a crisp, clear day, with no visible signs betraying a chance of storm and snow, and little ice circulating in the air. But what there was still constituted enough to chill the air in their lungs and freeze their breath as it emerged from their mouths and nostrils in streams of steam. The walls of rock narrowed into an overhang that seemed to dangle oppressively, as though at any moment it would collapse in upon them and solve their problems for once and all. But before this gloomy atmosphere could overtake them, the walls came to a sudden halt, widening briefly before leading out into the vast expanse of ice and rock that stretched to the horizon, with little to break the monotony other than the occasional outcrop and banked snow. From their position at the rear of the caravan, they could see the ranks of the Inuit stretch in front of them. Their pace was steady, and surprisingly brisk for all that. Fairbanks was some distance away, and the trail was across harshly exposed terrain, marked now by the warriors as they began to spread out a little on a winding path that picked its way between deceptively jagged rock and ice, and potholes that harbored potentially deadly pockets of ice and snow that would entrap like quicksand. Although there was no glacial activity that could be defined, these isolated spots operated in much the same deadly manner. The companions stayed to the rear of the war party, not wanting to work their way up, partly to conserve energy, and partly because it was useful to them to stay at the rear. Jordan slash Doc was at the head, with Thompson and McPhee, and so out of reach. It would have been preferable if the old buzzard had been within easy reach, but it was more important to try to keep as distant as possible from the beginnings of any action. Their priorities were clear: stay alive, and try to extricate Doc from any mess he may get them into while he was still Joseph Jordan. The two may actually turn out to be exclusive. Hanging back at the rear of the caravan could give them the chance to make a break for freedom if an opportunity arose. This, however, looked far from likely. There were sec men at their rear who occasionally came up close, their demeanor suggesting that they wouldn't hesitate to shoot first and ask questions later. There was little chance of dropping back farther from the caravan. Those Inuit who were closest to them also cast disapproving glances in their direction. It was pretty clear that a good proportion of the tribe found it hard to trust them. So it was likely that they were going to continue to be under close surveillance. It was going to be a long haul to Fairbanks. It was 2 days of marching across terrain that was unwelcoming and unforgiving. The clear skies of their departure gave way to chem clouds that turned the skies a yellow-gray, the stench of sulfur trapped beneath their oppressive weight. The strength of the winds, unbroken by any landmass, began to increase, and within a few hours the first storm had broken. It was nowhere near the force of other storms previously encountered, and no one sought shelter. Jordan, Thompson, and McPhee were driven men, forcing their charges to proceed along the trail, fighting against the horizontal rain and snow that whipped in the darkened air. The terrified whining of the animals could be heard, straining to break through the howling winds, and the tribesmen in front of the companions became nothing more than a vague blur. The caravan had stayed close together to facilitate such action during a storm, but nonetheless, the range of vision grew smaller with each passing minute. At the rear, the companions were more determined to keep the caravan in sight. Although the storm could give them cover in which to slip away, where would they go? Right now, they needed the protection and sense of direction the caravan could bring. Speech was useless, words whipped away by the storm before they had a chance to travel to their intended target. Instead, the companions used gestures to communicate. The five closed up, Ryan leading them nearer to the Inuit pack a few yards in front. It was as he moved forward that he caught the slightest glimpse of a small figure moving swiftly from his blind side. He caught it too late to react quickly enough. Launching itself forward, the figure cannoned into him, knocking him off balance on the slippery, icy rock of the trail. Ryan fell sideways, thrusting an arm out to try to break his fall. He felt the bones in his wrist and forearm jar heavily when they hit the rock, the shock catching a nerve and numbing the arm from the elbow down. The thing that had plowed into him was heavy and difficult to come to grips with. The skins and furs swathed the figure so well that it was hard to tell where the Inuit ended and the swaddling clothes began. Ryan felt the icy ground at his back as he grappled with the figure atop him. It was hard to see what kind of weapon the Inuit held. The man swung. The sparks from steel on stone told him that it was a blade. The figure had masked its face. With one arm numb, it was all Ryan could do to keep the Inuit from chilling him, using his working arm to fend off the blows. There was little chance he could ever reach for a weapon.
Fire blast.
There was only one chance to get the little bastard off him. Shifting, Ryan thrust upward with his hips. His sudden movement pushed the Inuit warrior upward.
There!
With his legs momentarily freed, Ryan braced his feet and pushed up harder, the increased momentum propelling the tribesman up and over his head to land on the rock. Ryan was scrambling to his feet when he felt someone at his side.
What?
Me, Ryan.
Jack.
What happened?
Ryan, one arm still numbed, fumbled the panga from its sheath with his good hand.
Some little bastard just tried to chew me. He's... Now where the hell did he go?
The other companions had now gathered around. But before they had a chance to ask further questions, they were on the sharp end of Lee Enfield 303 barrels as the Sekmen closed on them.
Keep moving! Mustn't lose sight of the others!
In the storm, there was no chance to discuss or to explain. Seeing that the retreating caravan was almost out of sight, the companions moved on, some not even aware of the attack on Ryan. At the end of the day, the storms began to abate. As darkness closed on them, the skies began to clear. The crescent moon and some constellations were visible through the heavy, chem-tinged atmosphere, and their faint light cast an unearthly glow over the flattened landscape, the banks of snow showing blue against black stretches of rock.